Hello, my name is Gurpreet Kaur, and I'm the founder of the BLM in the Sticks campaign, which is a national campaign aiming to end rural racism.
Thank you very much for joining me today, Gurpreet. My name is Tim Jerome, and I am a collections researcher on the Building Connections project for the Museum of English Rural Life. So, first of all, Gurpreet, could you tell me a bit about your life in a rural area and why you became involved with the Black Lives Matter movement?
Yeah, I've spent most of my life living in rural areas. I grew up in rural areas. My heritage is that my parents are from Punjab in India, and they moved over to the country. My father moved over here as a small child. My mother moved here when she was 18, and my dad was in the Royal Air Force, which he joined when he was 16. And as a result of being in the Royal Air Force, we moved around a lot, but always living in rural areas because you need, you know, flat planes for airfields. And I therefore grew up in all sorts of parts of the country, like Oxfordshire, Lincolnshire, and eventually in Scotland. And I was always usually the only brown person in the whole area that I lived in, let alone school or village, often the whole area. And that was quite an experience for me growing up. And I later, when I became an adult, moved to the city. I moved to Manchester to go to university, and then I moved to London. And London was the first place I felt really at home and at ease and didn't feel like I stuck out, because it was such a mixed community and people didn't really see any difference. Manchester was tricky because there's a large Asian population, and I was not used to being part of a large Asian population or being sort of identified as that. And actually there was quite a lot of prejudice amongst different groups of Asians, and there were lots of assumptions made about me and my the way I lived because I was Indian. And then when I had my son, I decided to move to a rural area in Essex and Wivenhoe. And I think I moved here because I've spent my life growing up in rural areas. So, you know, my heart really yearns for the sea, for woods, for nature, for the outdoors. And it was definitely a brilliant move for us because, you know, London is incredibly stressful to live in. I don't think a lot of people realize the level of stress you feel just from the environment. Even though you may feel more welcome, traffic, the people, it can be quite a lot. And anyway, I moved to Wivenhoe, and I've, for various reasons, had to sort of keep my head down here. Didn't really know a lot of people, but had the feeling that it was a very supportive community. And then when George Floyd was killed earlier this year, I was very upset about it, as many people were. But I couldn't claim to understand how that felt as a brown Asian woman living in Britain. My experience of racism is nothing like that of Black Americans. But what I felt, and that what I've seen a lot of other people feel around the country who are not Black, is that they felt scared. You know, they saw that incident. It was terrifying to watch. And it wasn't the first, obviously. But it made me finally kind of get to a point where I felt like I didn't want to keep my head down anymore and pretend that racism is okay. And it's not that I ever thought it was okay, but when you live your life suffering from racism, you start to file it away, depending on the person. For me, I would file it away in a box and think, you know, just forget about it. Don't dwell on it. Keep moving forwards, because you can't actually live your life very comfortably feeling like you stick out and feeling like you don't belong. So you have to try and almost gloss over it in your mind so that you can carry on. And that experience of seeing that made that box in my head explode. And I was very traumatized and upset for a couple of days. And I spent those days feeling like this was totally unfair and wrong, and that no one should have to live putting up with any form of racism anymore. In this time, you know, day and this year, I just felt it was enough was enough. So that's what led me to become, I decided in that moment that I wanted to be an anti-racist. And to do that, my first step was to write a letter to my local MP. And then I thought I would post it on our local community notice board and suggest that if anyone wanted a copy of the letter, they could get in touch. That then sparked off a whole local movement. There were discussions online about I was the first to bring the conversation into the local community. And even though everyone was isolating, there was a lot of discussion online. And there were a lot of comments as well online that clearly harbored racist views. And I had lots of people contacting me, genuinely in shock that these views existed in our local area. And that for me was a real learning point, because I had always assumed that everybody knows that racism is everywhere. in this white, systemically, in this society that's been set up, it is everywhere. And I was really shocked to find that there were lots of white people in my rural area who didn't know that, who were surprised that racism happened in their village, surprised that racism was happening on their doorstep. That for me was a big point of learning, because it made me think, well, if there's lots of people who don't actually realize this is a problem, then surely if we can get them to realize that, they could become part of the solution.
Yeah. Do you feel like the social media aspect contributed to providing evidence to those people that the racist attitudes existed? Because those comments that you see online, once they're there, then it's evidence for everyone else in the community that attitudes exist that previously might have just been sort of kept in the shadows a bit, out in the open. So do you feel that was helpful to revealing that the racism
existed? Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I think what's interesting is those comments come, and there's very different types of comments. Some comments are overtly racist. Some comments are trying to shut down the argument, downplay it, deny it, say it's not an issue. But even that in itself is interesting, because it's like, well, if you're a white man and you're saying that racism doesn't exist in your area, how are you so sure about that if you're a white man? You don't have to suffer from it. So how would you be the expert on it? And those sorts of discussions would sort of open up people's eyes to that. And then you would have people who would come up with some really shocking evidence-based arguments about that basically sort of perpetuate racist views. For example, one person came online and was making this big argument about how black people are not oppressed in this country, but they've been told that they're oppressed, and because of that they have this victim mentality and think that they're being treated differently when they're not. Now, that is a completely racist viewpoint to hold. And that was quite shocking to some people, because here you had an intelligent man actually espousing some really far right ideas. And I think that was quite disconcerting for people.
Okay. So the protests that you organised along the River Colne in August, could you tell me a bit about the day of the protest itself? Do you feel like it went well, and do you have any sort of standout memories from it?
The day along the river is a day I will always remember. I mean, we as a local group decided to hold a protest, and I had the idea, because we live along the River Colne, it's a really beautiful setting. I thought it'd be great if we could hold a protest and film it and put it online, because one of my first thoughts was, well, if we do this protest in the little village, who's going to see it? What impact is it going to have? What's the point of it? And I think that's a thought process lots of people in rural areas go through. So I thought if we filmed it and put it online, it might encourage other rural areas to do the same. And we could maybe in that way have an impact and show that, Black Lives Matter isn't just an issue for cities. It's an issue around the country. I also learned from that event that it actually sent a really strong message to people in our area who do harbour racist opinions, that that's not okay. And there are people in your village who are not okay with that. And it also sent a really powerful message to people of colour or mixed families who live here, who suffer in silence, that actually they're not ignored, and it is understood that they do have problems. And that was one of the most heartening things for me. There were a few families who really thanked me for that event, because they had felt up until that point that no one really recognised what their experience was and how hard life could be for them in a rural area. And in terms of the day, it went brilliantly. We didn't publicise it, because a lot of the people in the group were very conscious, and rightly so, about COVID and not wanting to have too many people show up and, you know, to have a situation where we couldn't socially distance properly. So we decided to have ribbons, and we were all 2 metres apart. And we had an extra 150 people, which we could accommodate. So that was fine. But just through the channels of that group, we ended up with over 350 people lined up along the Colne on our side and on Roehedge, which is across the river. And Roehedge had found out about our event and wanted to be included, because they had had some issues in their village where they felt the voices of Black people were being kind of diminished and not being given a public platform. And apparently it was the first time the two villages had worked together in a cooperative way. We had our local councillor, he's head of the Colchester Council, actually come down and do a talk. And then we had a local poet, A.L. Kennedy, who had written a poem, I've forgotten the name of it now, I'm sorry, but it's about white privilege. And she came and read a part of her poem, and it was very powerful. We've got video of it on our website, if anyone wants to, on our social media, if anyone wants to see it. And the day was just fantastic. And now every time I walk down that bit of river, it all comes back to me, and I don't think I'll ever forget it.
Oh, fantastic. And I'm sure that will evoke some powerful memories in everybody who was involved. So it seems that a key message that you want to get across is that white people who aren't racist should become anti-racist. And do you feel that more people are now adopting this attitude in Wivenhoe as a result of the group's organisation and the protest itself?
Yeah, I think locally, as a result of the protest, we've woken up people to the idea that anti-racism is a stance, and it's a way of being. And it's not enough to just not be racist. You know, it's not enough to actively be, you know, when you're being not racist, you're being passive. You're not actually doing anything. You're just not doing anything wrong or bad or hurtful. But when you're being anti-racist, it's an active stance. You are making it clear in the interactions that you have, in the way that you discuss the issues, in the way that you challenge anything that comes up in front of you, that you are not okay with any form of racism. And racist people who are racist are also very active and they are clear about their position. And what we're finding is more and more people locally are very clear about their position being anti-racist, and that's what's needed, because that's the only way to kind of help people who are racist to feel more uncomfortable about airing those views in public, and about, you know, feeling okay about doing that. You know, there's those quotes, isn't there, about how it's the people who did nothing that let bad people, I can't remember the quote now, it's a really good one, but you know, it's when people do nothing that evil persists. And I guess that's our philosophy, really, that if you can do something and you feel strongly about it, then you should. And what I've been working on as a result of the protest and as a result of the response that we had to it, we've now launched a national campaign, which I'm now spearheading. And that campaign is about trying to develop resources and more information for white people in rural areas around the country who want to become anti-racist and how to go about doing that. So I think that protest was incredibly important for highlighting that as a way of being locally, as well as igniting something that now could have a really big impact much further afield.
Okay, so why do you think that these sorts of protests tend to be less common in rural areas as opposed to urban environments?
I think in rural areas, it depends on your makeup of your local area. A lot of rural areas are often don't always have a very big young population. And obviously in cities, you have a larger younger population and they often are the ones running protests. And I think in rural areas, when we're talking about Black Lives Matter protests, I think there have actually been a phenomenal number of them. I think The Guardian found that, did some research and found there had been over 250 protests in rural areas. I think there's a real issue in rural areas that people are worried about sparking off controversy. So some of the reasons rural racism is downplayed is that local people don't want to believe that their place they live isn't idyllic. You know, often you live in a village, you have a good level of camaraderie, everyone knows everyone, you know, and yes, people are helpful and supportive and, you know, you can borrow a cup of sugar off your neighbour and all of that stuff. But I think people don't want to see that actually some people don't get those privileges, that they're treated, you know, differently, because that then means that there's something wrong. The other thing that happens is a lot of local councils, town councils, local authorities really don't want to shine a light on rural racism. So what happens is there's a lot of data that's just not collected. And the way that hate crimes are now reported, they cover a range of issues. So it's very hard to get the stats in a rural area about what's happened that is actually racially motivated. But there are other bits of research that show that you are more likely to suffer a violent attack in a rural area than you are in a city from racism. And what happens is local councils and town councils don't want to make the area appear undesirable for new people moving in, for business, for financial opportunities, because obviously a lot of rural areas do come last on the list when it comes to government funding. A lot of funding and a lot of businesses are focused in cities, and that's a big pressure on rural areas as well at a kind of, you know, governmental level.
Yeah, so if someone was to be listening to this who lived in a rural area, wanted to do something about racism in their community but didn't think they'd have a wide range of support in their community, what would you say to them? What advice would you give them?
I would say the first thing with anti-racism work is to, first of all, look after yourself. And it's really important because this is not easy work. It's a hard slog. And if you do need to take care of yourself, and that's a message that we're putting out there in terms of our campaign. So I would first of all say, you know, read up about anti-racism work. There's lots of great resources. You can visit our social media, which is at BLM in the Sticks. And we can, you know, you will see lots and lots of information that you can read about how to go about these discussions and about how to learn more for yourself, actually, so that when you're having these discussions, you feel like you're coming from a point of being informed about it. I would also then suggest that, you know, you speak out and see who else in your community is feeling the same way, you know, get some allies on board. Don't do it all on your own. Sometimes it's just about sparking a conversation. I was able, I think, as an Indian woman, to say on a notice board in a rural area, hey, this is a problem, I've written a letter about it. That then sparked off local interest, and there were lots of people who came forward wanting to help and wanting to do something. I don't know, as a white person, if you went on a notice board and said, hey, this is a problem, whether you would get the same reaction, because as an Indian woman, it was quite hard for people to say this isn't a problem. You know, they did, but it was much smaller numbers. As a white person, you could be faced with lots of people saying, why are you saying this? You know, what do you know about it? And I don't think that should stop you. But I think what it will do is it will unearth who is against what you're trying to do. But it will also unearth people who are in support of what you're saying. And I think the most important thing about this work is that we keep the conversation going. We have to keep the conversation going. We have to keep anti-racism work high on the agenda, because, you know, a racist society doesn't work for anyone. It works much better when we're all being treated equally. And equally doesn't mean treated the same, because everybody has different needs and we all come from different places. And what I need might be different to what you need, but it does mean everyone has the right to living fairly in a fair society and has the same opportunities. And that is better and richer for everyone.
Yeah, and the Black Lives Matter in the Sticks movement has developed quite rapidly, as you mentioned. It's now up and down the country. It's quite widespread, isn't it? So there's likely to be support fairly nearby wherever you are.
Absolutely. We've got people working all over the country, and they're working independently, but they're part of our network. So if you want to find out who is near you, and we have regional lists of people now and trying to get those connected up. So if you are interested and you want to, you know, lean on us, if you don't feel you have anyone in your community already, even if you do, you know, if you get in touch, we can link you up with other people who are in your area or close to you who are like-minded and might be able to give you other advice and tips on how to get a movement started if that's what you want. But I would make it clear that anti-racism work doesn't have to just be about protests. You know, protests are a really good way of engaging the community, showing that you exist, sending out a message. But when it comes to racism, you know, supporting local BME groups with fundraising, you know, finding out who your communities are and where they live and what they might need. There are lots of different ways that you can have an impact. You know, you can run cultural events and have good opportunities for people to learn about different cultures. You can speak to your school about what the education they're giving your children and how diverse it is. So it's, if you know, protests are a great way, and there's always people who like protesting, but if you don't like protesting, then there's other things you can do that can also have an impact.
Okay, thank you very much for your time today, Gurpreet. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed it.